Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Does picking an outfit have you running a little too fashionably late? We get it. Great taste takes time. That's why Drizly, the number one app for alcohol delivery, has your back with the largest selection of beer, wine, and spirits delivered in under 60 minutes. Convenience never goes out of style. So if you need to spend some extra time in the mirror instead of at the store, download the Drizly app or go to drizly.com. That's drizly.com today.
Maryland sports fans, there's only one sportsbook in the great state of Maryland with over 50 years experience booking bets and supporting customers. Betfred Sportsbook at Longshots is now open and is the only sportsbook in Frederick offering cash betting on football, basketball, world soccer, and more. Visit the Betfred Sportsbook at I-270 and MD-85 in Frederick, right next to Longshots off-track betting. Go to BetfredSports.com for more information and your chance to win exclusive merchandise. Must be 21 or older. Play responsibly. For help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
The Decibel Geek Podcast with Chris Sinzak and Aaron Camaro.
Talking about albums he don't remember, but albums we'll never forget. This is the Decibel Geek Podcast. My name is Aaron Camaro, joined as always by my awesome buddy, Chris Sinzak.
I'm excited.
Yeah, this is going to be a good one today. I'm really excited myself. This has been a long time coming, kind of, because these albums have had a big part of Decibel Geek over the years, because when we first got together, I think we both really, truly immersed ourselves into Alice Cooper.
Yeah, that's true.
And so it's been such a big part of the show, and especially this era of Alice Cooper. And we'll get into all this today because it's pretty fascinating. But today we're talking about Alice Cooper's Blackout era.
Yeah.
He don't remember.
It's a really interesting era. I know, obviously, from a personal standpoint, it wasn't his best time, but very creative, very, took a lot of risks on the records he did during this period.
It's going to be fun to talk about this stuff today, but before we get to all that, you know us, we got to take care of our business. How do we do that? You know us that well, too. We read our reviews and recommendations from Facebook, from iTunes, from Podchaser, wherever we can get them. We're going to read them. Here's a couple for you right now. This one's awesome. Comes to us from Tim ENT from right here in the good old USA. Goes a little something like this. Your live bands podcast made me realize I never wrote to thank you for the Japanese Metalcast last year. It opened my eyes to a whole new segment, especially my current obsession with X-Japan. These guys are phenomenal. Thanks again for giving me a whole new band to enjoy. By the way, live band, Rammstein. That's a good one.
Have you seen footage of the new Rammstein tour?
I have not.
The pyro is insane.
Those guys are good with pyro.
They've got these like poles that go out into the audience and shoot off flames. It's crazy.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
That Japanese metal show was pretty fun to do.
It's kind of becoming legendary.
It has.
We talked about this not too long ago, about how we felt about it, how awesome it was to learn all that from Kevin Williams.
Mm-hmm.
And it truly does. It doesn't go away. Like, there's episodes we've done years ago that we'll never hear about again. Some of them, thankfully. But this is one
true.
We're glad that keeps getting brought back up, because as much as Kevin was able to turn us on to Japanese metal, the Visual K, he was able to do it for all our listeners, too. And that's what it's all about.
That was a fun one.
I love
one.
It. All right, and we got another one. This one is a Facebook recommendation, and it comes to us from our good friend Scott Stein. We've known him for a while.
Yeah, we hung out with him last year at the expo, and he's coming back again this year.
Awesome.
Yeah, I'm excited to see Scott again.
Yeah, he was one cool dude. I can't wait to hang out with him again.
Yeah.
His recommendation says this. Decibel Geek is awesome. Chris and Aaron are great guys. They know how to put on an awesome expo, and they know how to show the fans a good time. that has been Guitar Player and that horrendous Kiss podcast that we won't mention have no idea what they're talking about. Liars! I discovered them through Ralph and Ian from the Rock and Metal Combat podcast. I got to experience and participate in the first Rock and Pod Expo last year in Nashville.
It was the second one, actually.
He was so buzzed up, he didn't even know. That's such a good time. Got to meet all kinds of cool people and purchase some awesome vinyl. Chris and Aaron were also generous enough to let me come hang out with them, Ralph and Ian, at the Decibel Geek headquarters the Sunday after the expo. Shh, that's a secret. You're not supposed to tell people
that. Be quiet. Hope your liver's recovered.
The Illuminati of podcasting.
Yeah.
I already booked my room for Rockin' Pod, and I'll see you guys in August. Rock on, brothers. That's awesome.
Thank you so much, Scott.
Scott rules, man.
Excited
I can't
to see
wait
you again.
To see him. So much fun.
Very cool. All right, our other people, favorite people, the Geeks of the Week. These are the people that shared on Facebook and retweeted on Twitter last week's conversation with Jeff Scott Soto. Thanks again, Jeff, so much for coming on to the show. It was great.
It was awesome,
have you.
Man.
Yeah, wonderful stories. And
thanks to the people that gave us good questions to ask. I mean, we had some pretty good ones, but we really had the help of our friends
that. Listeners submitted some amazing questions. Geeks of the Week this week are Victor Ruiz, Ken West, Cobras and Fire Podcast, Ridiculous Rock Record Reviews, Mike Grabowski, Joseph Capone, Matt Ashcraft, Mike Stewart, Kevin Williams, Gino Ames, David Glenn, Christina Green, Joe Royland, Sit and Spin with Joe, Trevor McDougall, CGCM Podcast, Barefoot Otters.
Okay, awesome.
Jay Shabluski, Ernesto Aguiar, JJ Mack, David Cathy, Eladio, Robin the Hood, Mighty K27, and of course,
the Mooger Fooger. That's right. Those are the people that shared last week's episode, be it on Facebook, Twitter, wherever you're sharing it at. And they did that in order to help us get the word out on the streets of the internet, to let people know what we got going on here at Decibel Geek, and to invite them in to listen to it and become a part of the family that we've all become. Isn't that great? Yeah. I love that.
And speaking of the Mooger Fooger, he and Mrs. Fooger will once again be coming to the Rock and Pod Expo, so you can actually meet the Mooger Fooger
you
in person.
Absolutely meet the Mooger Fooger. How cool is that?
They're both really great people.
Yeah, they are. I can't wait. I'm so excited for Rock and Pod 3.
Me too. And being a big announcement that recently came out, Dave Ellefson is going to join us.
That's
from
right.
Megadeth.
How cool is that? The bass player from Megadeth, all them classic albums.
Yep.
The guy that's been a metal hero for so many years, he's going to be at Rockin' Pod 3.
Yep.
Along you with... can meet him, hang out with him. I'm sure he's going to be doing some kind of panel up on stage.
Oh, yeah. They're going to be, him and his partner Tom, going to do some music business panels. So that'll be cool for the musicians that want to come and check out and learn tips and tricks on how to advance your career, and from guys that certainly know what
no
they're talking
kidding.
About.
Yeah.
And then, of course, as always, you know, Michael Sweet, Brian from Kix, who's going to be an upcoming guest on the podcast.
That's right. Thanks to everybody that voted on that for us. Helped us pick the album for Albums Unleashed.
Yeah, Midnight Dynamite by Kix.
Should be fun.
Yeah.
I love that album.
Of course, and also Jason Beeler from Saigon Kick, or Yvonne from Danzig, Anthony from Tortora, Roxy Blue, Toby Wright's coming back. You know, the list goes on and on. Go to rockandpod.com.
Right.
Get your ticket there. Go to the ticketing tab, and you can get a general admission. You can even get a VIP. You can get a concert ticket for the Rock and Roll Residency show the night before. And the best thing is a two-day thing. So, you know, it's at a hotel, and you can get an awesome discounted rate for your room and just stay there on site and hang out with everybody, because pretty much all the guests are staying at the hotel, so you can you can rub shoulders with a lot of people.
We're getting ready to get our room, and the wife said, these rooms are expensive. And I said, no. Did you go to rockandpod.com and go through the link to get you to the discounted rooms? And she said, no. And then she did that and goes, okay, this will work.
Yeah.
So
it's a good deal.
It's true.
It's going to be fun. Yeah, it's just come and stay on site and hang out with everybody.
It's going to be great.
Yep.
What podcasts are coming? I want to know. We've been talking about the stars for so long. Who's the real stars of the show?
Well, you know, this event doesn't happen without the podcasters, and we've got some great ones coming this year.
We put the pod in Rockin' Pod.
Yeah, we've got several from previous years coming, and we've got some new ones, too. Decibel Geek's going to be there.
Of course we're going to be there. We're always there.
Rock and or Roll, BJ Cramp.
Sweet.
Tramps Like Us, the Bruce Springsteen podcast.
Right on.
Good old Lee McCormick. Rock and Metal Combat are now on board.
That's awesome. That's great news.
Yeah.
I think I just heard some more tickets sell.
Yeah. Digital Kill, the Radio Stars coming.
Right on. That's awesome.
Julian Gill from Kiss FAQ is
everybody loves Julian Gill.
Can't wait to see him. I Love That Song podcast with Brad Page. He's going to come this year, and he was a first-timer last year, so I'm excited to have him
that's
back.
Right. Cool.
The Ken Mills Network of Shows. Podkiss to the Kiss Room with Matt Porter. Pop, Cheap Talk, and Zilch, the Monkees podcast.
They get their own floor.
Yeah, they need one. Also, Talk Toomey. Josh Toomey's coming back.
That's awesome. Hey, Toomey, thanks for the heads up on not being able to hang Rockin' Pod posters all over town. I might have got arrested.
Yeah, and I would have had a huge bill. Potter Than Hell recently just signed back up. They're coming back again this year. Good old Steve Wright. Growing Up Rock's coming. They signed up this past week.
Love those guys.
Sonny Pooney and Stephen Michael.
Yeah.
I'll be on an upcoming episode of their show where I go head-to-head with Stephen with rock trivia.
Oh, nice.
And I'm not going to say how I did.
You can tell by the look on your face.
Spoiler alert. It was bad. All right. It was a long day. That's my only excuse. Bill Elam, who's a big podcast super fan, him and his daughter are starting a show called Fangirl with a Paycheck. So,
nice.
So they're going to be there as podcasters.
That's cool.
Also, another new one that's coming on board. This is a vendor / podcast that's coming on board. They're local guys. It's called Bombers and they have a rock and roll clothing line called Bombers and Sleeves.
Okay.
And it's really cool rock shirts and stuff. And then they have a podcast called The Bombcast, and they're going to be there as podcasters also.
Hey, that's cool. I like that.
Bushy and the Mountain Man are coming.
Sweet.
So, you know, good old Nate Atchison.
Finally.
Yeah. Well, he was there for year one. He had to miss year two. He's stoked about coming, especially with Dave Ellison on board. He's fangirling out over that.
I love it.
The I Love It Loudcast is returning. Good old Pete Cicery.
Right on.
A live radio show called WFMC Jams. They're a Tennessee-based internet radio show. They're going to be coming.
Okay, cool.
Another show that's...
No, you're not a podcast.
All content creators are welcome, as long as you rock.
I'm just teasing.
And another one called The Electric Crush, which is an online radio station, a radio show up in Pennsylvania. They're good friends with Matt Porter, and they're going to come all the way down. And then the recent one, we had a hashtag contest for whichever podcast could get the most hashtags from their listeners, like to post pictures with the hashtag Rockin' Pod and the name of the show, would win a free platinum package. And that's a show called Totally Driven Entertainment or Totally Driven Radio.
Okay.
And one of the hosts has actually got a wrestling background. He was in the Dudley Brothers.
Yeah, that's right. You told me
he was Chubby Dudley in the Dudley Brothers.
Chubby Dudley back in the ECW.
Yeah, ECW. That's right.
That's awesome.
So that's who we got so far. And I've got a few more that are possibly going to be signing up too. But that's a pretty good list so far.
The true stars of Rockin' Pod right there.
Oh, yeah. I can't wait to see everybody. And, you know,
Rockstars.
I love having rock stars, but and they provide great content for all our friends.
Exactly.
But the best, and I went on Steven and Sonny's show recently, and I just like, because they're like, what is your favorite thing about Rockin' Pod? The rock stars are great, the vinyl's great, all that stuff, signing sessions and all that, and the panels are cool. It's just the community. It's bringing people together. Like, cause you know, it's great to do shows on Skype and all that and talk on Facebook, but nothing can replace real human experience. So
right, for sure,
getting to bring all these people together, meet each other, you know, and like the first year, I think this was my favorite memory, was seeing Ken Mills and Gary Schaller meet for the first time after doing podcasts for like 10 years.
Yeah, that's podcasting history.
It was
right
amazing.
There. We saw it.
And all these, you know, we get people that are listeners that come out to meet shows and then they get inspired and start their own show.
Yeah.
So there's been a lot of shows launched just from the convention.
Yeah.
So it's just a great community. And, you know, if you're anywhere near Nashville, come hang out. It's going to be a really good time. And I mean, we have a lot going on. And I don't think I've ever heard a bad review of it. I think everyone that ever goes just has a great time.
Yep. Never once have I heard anybody complain. That's my favorite thing about it, too, is you just look around. Everybody's smiling. Everybody's laughing. Everybody's having a good time. Everybody's wearing the coolest rock t-shirts, you know, and there's something cool going on over here. And, whoa, look at that. And, whoa, what's this? You know, and, whoa, look at that dude. And I can't believe he's here. And, whoa, look, they got this album over here. And I'm going to buy it at a good price. And I'm going to walk it over here, and this guy's going to autograph it for me, and I'm going to hang that on the wall forever, you know? And
it's a cool, it's all-encompassing rock and roll experience. You
and
know?
This year,
it's
there's going to be people running around like rock stars. Like
yeah, we'll have some cosplayers.
I can't wait.
Yeah.
I sure hope somebody does Dee Schneider.
Well, I don't know if Sarah Jessica Parker's available, but we'll see.
Give her a call. Book it.
My wife gets mad whenever I make that joke.
Yeah.
Because she likes Sex and the City.
Every time
the intro comes, I'm like, hey, it's Dee Schneider. She's like, shut up.
A Twisted Sister.
Yeah.
All right, so that's awesome. So are we ready to talk some of the darkest days of Alice Cooper?
Yeah, let's go.
All right, so I guess let's start with this. What encompasses what people consider Alice Cooper's blackout era?
To me, it starts with Flush the Fashion, goes through Dada. It's a four-album run. Some people like to just do the three after Flush the Fashion, but I kind of lumped that one in because it was, that was where the wheels started kind of falling off for him.
Right. Yeah. It was an honest attempt, I think, of doing something new and interesting and taking a different approach. I mean, in this era in 1980, when this is all going down, I mean, I was sitting here when I was doing research and I said, you know, I don't know if I've ever seen the video for Clones.
Oh, I have.
And so I put it on, and the first thing I notice is that, you know, Alice Cooper's kind of unrecognizable. You know, you don't look at that guy in that video and say, oh, cool, it's Alice Cooper. There's no eye makeup. That stuff's gone. You know, this is 1980, and Alice Cooper's got the jump on Kiss. He's taking off the makeup now.
No, he did have makeup. It was just altered.
I mean, it wasn't like the classic black around the eyes with the lines.
It was
more
like a Mommy Dearest type look.
It was, yeah. I mean, it was...
he looked pretty scary, honestly.
Right.
But a lot of that was because of his physical state at the time. Well, when he started working with Bernie Taupin for From the Inside, that's when he started dabbling in cocaine.
Yeah.
And cocaine kind of just became his life for
sure.
While.
Because when you're a guy that all you want to do is drink, well, there ain't nothing better than cocaine. You can drink all day and all night with that shit.
Well, and I think during the early times, during the blackout period, I think it was just cocaine. I don't think he was drinking quite again. But by the time we got to Dada, he started drinking again.
Yeah.
So either way, it was bad.
We got our picks in order. We're going to each pick our top five, but we're not going to do them in actual order. We'll just do them as they come up. So here's a great way to kick it off from Flush the Fashion. This is my number three favorite Alice Cooper song of the blackout era, and it's that song I just talked about, Clones.
Doctor, he's on the line. We take incubation another day. I'm all alone, so are we all. We're all clones, all in one and one and all, all in one and one and all. We destroy the government, we're destroying time. No more problems on the way. I'm through, doctor. We don't need your kind. The other ones, ugly ones, stupid boys, wrong ones. I'm all alone, so are we all. We're all clones, all the one and one and all, all the one and one and all. Six is having problems, adjusting to his clone status.
Song's a trip, man, because he's wearing like the commando hat, and it just, that was the thing. I was like, if I didn't know, like if somebody played this for me and didn't say who this is,
oh, you wouldn't think it was
Alice I would Cooper. Never think it was Alice Cooper ever.
It's almost like a Gary Newman song.
It totally
very,
is
very new wave,
but it's got a lot to do with the musicians that play on the album, I think. And what you get on this album is you get Davey Johnson on guitar. And he was like the early 70s Elton John guitarist. Oh, yeah. This guy's like a multi-instrumentalist, can play just about anything out there. Known for such metal classics as Rocket Man, Crocodile Rock, and Tiny Dancer. But so, I mean, he's coming from Elton John. Then you've got John Cooker Lopresti on bass. And he comes from Melissa Manchester Band.
House was really mixing it up at this time.
For sure. He goes on to play with Peter Criss on the Let Me Rock You album.
Oh, yeah?
Too. Yep.
Oh, that's interesting.
And then you got Dennis Conway on drums, and he's been Alice Cooper's drummer since like 78. Mm-hmm. He also goes on to play on Peter Criss's Let Me Rock You.
Interesting.
So two members of this band go on to play with Peter Criss after this.
So it's their fault.
Maybe. So. I don't know. I blame Elton John, I guess.
And then, yeah, Fred Mandell on the keyboards.
Yes, and he's been Alice's go-to guy since like 77, and he'd go on to play keyboards with Pink Floyd on The Wall. He played on Queen's The Works. He played on Freddie Mercury's Mr. Bad Guy in 85, his solo album. Mm-hmm. Then he played keyboards on a bunch of Elton John records. Played keyboards for Elton John. How good is this guy?
Huh.
He's playing keyboards for Elton John.
It's like playing drums on a Peter Criss record. Just saying.
Indeed. Indeed. And then most recently, he played the cover of Smokin' on the Anthrax album for Anthems, the Boston cover.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So that's pretty cool. Wow. He's got a long history in rock.
Interesting background.
You know, so then, of course, you got Roy Thomas Baker as the producer, and that guy made his name with Free on their 1970 album Fire and Water.
That's great.
And then he went with Nazareth for a few albums, mm-hmm. and then he did Queen and Queen 2.
Yeah.
And the three most worked with bands right before Flush the Fashion, Journey, Foreigner, and man, did he love producing the Cars.
Yeah, he did most of their stuff at that time.
Yes,
really. Yeah.
And loved it. Like, went and saw them live and was like, I want to produce this band. Yeah. I want to produce Alice Cooper to sound like this band.
I mean, he's kind of a forerunner of the new wave production style, where it was like very crisp, a lot of high end, not a lot of bass. You know, and that's, although that's the kind of the knock that this album gets from me, is I'm not a big fan of Roy Thomas Baker's production on this record.
No.
I think the song, there's a lot of good songs on this
A lot of good songs on it.
But especially Clones. If you hadn't picked Clones, I was going to. But it's just the tinniness of this album just doesn't work for me.
Yeah. Did you pick anything off Flush Fashion?
I did, and I'm going to play it now. This is one that Chuck Garrick, when we interviewed him, we were pressing him to put songs into the set list from this era.
Such nerds.
And I remember he said that this was one that they had toyed around with possibly adding. They still haven't, I don't think. This is Grim Facts.
We'll be right back. to slide inside my pockets, but it's strictly SRO. In fact, everything gotta know.
That song's awesome. I really love this whole album a lot.
And
for the most part, like, I almost love every song on it.
For the diehards that are going to come back and say, yeah, they did play it on this tour, then I'm sorry. I don't remember them ever putting it into the set.
Yeah. Well, if you want to find out for sure, and I have to remind myself to say this, there's a website called UK Sick Things.
Yeah, Sick Things is a great site.
.com/Alice Cooper.
Yep.
So good. Yeah. So packed with amazing information. Whoever did that, man, kudos to you, because fantastic stuff on there. And I've got some cool stories and some little tidbits and stuff that I found mainly thanks to that site. So if you're a big Alice Cooper fan, oh, you're about to get your mind blown. You got to go check out this site. It's uksickthings.com/Alice Cooper.
Yeah, it's a great site. It's a great message board, too.
Yeah. That's a great song.
But yeah, Grim Facts is a cool track. And actually says Grim Facts was part of a paranormal evening with Alice Cooper in 2018. So there you go.
All right.
Thanks, Wikipedia. I mean, I don't read Wikipedia.
This album goes number 44 on the U.S. Billboard charts. But, you know, as I said at the time, you got Pink Floyd, Van Halen, AC/DC, Blondie, and Queen.
Yeah, it got lost in the shuffle. The
best things going in rock. And, of course, you got ABBA. That's huge in this time, you know. So new Alice Cooper album. You know, the hardcore fans are still getting it. Oh, gets it up to 44. That's not too bad.
There was
this ain't the only former makeup wearing guy from the 70s that's kind of going on a turn right now as Kiss. This is the year that Unmasked comes out. Yep. So they're kind of going on the same trajectory, different directions, but definitely the trajectory is down for both these bands. And I think the comparison on this album to me was always like, it's kind of like Kiss Dynasty. Oh, that's their disco album.
Right.
Because of the one song. Same thing for this, because Clones, as a single, reaches number 40 on the U.S. singles charts, and it goes to number 75 on the U.S. disco charts.
Really?
There was such a thing back then.
I always considered it more of a new wave track than a disco track.
It made number 75 on the disco charts. Somebody's dancing to that. That's
it's a danceable song.
It's a very danceable song.
Yeah.
Here's another one. This is one I really like. This is my number 5 favorite from this era of Alice Cooper. It just goes to show how much I love this album, because I've got multiple picks off Flush the Fashion. I'm going to unload on you right now. This is one of my favorite songs. It just reminds me of what it must have been like to be a kid in this era. It's a kind of a weird time capsule song, and it rocks, and I love it. From Flush the Fashion, this is Alice Cooper with Dance Yourself to Death.
Social position. my cool activity is suffering too. I get a kiss goodbye.
Another one, another awesome song off Flush of Fashion.
Yeah, and there's more than that.
Yeah, there is. I love the whole thing. I got an interesting story for you I found on that website. Before the tour starts for Flush the Fashion, Alice finds out that someone's selling some old White House guard uniforms.
I remember hearing about this.
He wants them for his crew members to wear during the tour. So the costumes, instead, they end up going to a marching band from some school. So apparently Alice flew out a couple of those band members to throw balloons out during School's Out at a show in Los Angeles. He couldn't get them himself, so he flies out the kids that want them and say, okay, you got to be a part of my show then.
Right.
The tour starts out with UK punk rocker Bram Tchaikovsky. You ever heard of that?
Mm-mm.
He's the opener, but eventually he's replaced by an up-and-comer named Billy Squire. On August 19th, Alice Cooper cancels a show in Toronto due to illness, causing 13,000 plus fans to riot, and they destroy the Canadian National Exhibition Arena. The rest of the year, for Alice Cooper, it seems kind of hit and miss. A lot of canceled shows here and there.
Yeah.
A lot of postponed shows. Not real good out on the road.
There's a black and white concert of this tour on YouTube. It's the picture's awful, but if you want to see a little bit of a representation of that tour, you can find it.
Yeah.
I think it's like a New Jersey show, I believe.
Well, and I love this album so much, I got one more pick off of it. This is my number one favorite song from this era of Alice Cooper. This song kind of basically is the theme song for this era of Alice Cooper, I think. It really kind of speaks to what's going on in his life and basically continues to go on in his life for a couple more years. The lyrics are about as clever and insightful as there could ever possibly be. I think it's something that anyone can relate to.
Mm-hmm.
It's a tune called Pain.
I was the wound inside while Jesus prayed.
I was the filthiest word at the vandalized grave.
It's a compliment to me to feel you screaming through the night, all night, tonight.
Easily number one.
Would have definitely made my list. Yeah. That and Clones easily would have made my list, but you beat me to the punch on both of them.
And there's a bunch of other great songs on this album, too, that I really like. This is the one I had the hardest time picking songs from, but I knew as soon as you brought me the idea that Pain was my number one, and holy shit, was I blown away when we saw him
here
in Nashville, and he played that song.
It was
great,
and it sounded as great as I expected it to.
Oh, it sounded so good.
Yeah.
Made me feel something inside, something special.
Yeah, that was great.
Love it. That brings us to 1981. Time to start a new tour. The Special Forces Tour. That's going to kick off in June in Concord, California, before the album's even released. YNT is the opening act for that first show.
Really?
But Joe Perry Project and a band called Spider are openers for most of the rest of the tour.
Interesting.
Yeah. The album sales, you know, they're kind of slumping. This isn't what Alice Cooper's used to, especially after that last one. But, you know, he's not hurting at all for concert attendance. And the religious protests before the concerts... And they're at an all-time high.
Satanic panic era.
Yeah, a lot of that stuff going on at Alice Cooper shows. There's a cool little picture on that website where it shows like a pamphlet that people were handing out from that time. Mm-hmm. And it says, Alice Cooper says this, and Alice Cooper says that. And it's quotes from him, you know, and things that he said. And it doesn't paint him to be a very nice person. And at the end, you know, it's like, these are song titles. And it's like... Goes to Hell and this and that, you know, and it's got like the controversial satanic sounding, you know, Alice Cooper songs. And if you didn't know no better, you'd be scared of Alice Cooper. That's still part of the magic, even in 1981.
Well, yeah, I'm sure he enjoyed the publicity he got from that.
What do you think of this album?
I like it a lot.
I'm not a big fan of this.
Oh, really?
One. No.
I don't know if I like it better than, I don't like it better than Flush the Fashion, but I do like it. It's up there, though. I don't know. I think it's a good album. Richard Podalor did the production. It was Three Dog Night's producer.
That's right. The original Podfather.
Yeah.
That guy had been producing albums since the 60s and known for his work with Iron Butterfly, Black Oak Arkansas, Steppenwolf, and you said it, Three Dog Night.
Yeah.
Three Dog Night and Alice Cooper. I don't see it.
I have a sealed vinyl promo radio copy of this album.
Oh, nice.
On vinyl. Yeah, I found that and... I don't know. I like it. It's an adventurous record. It's definitely got its misses, but it does have a few great songs on it.
What'd you pick off it?
So for this one, and then I'll tell this story because one of my main takeaways from this album is the Tomorrow Show with Tom Snyder interview that he did on TV, and he looks fucking frightening in that interview and
his
the performance.
His pupils are so dilated.
He is so high, and also he is gaunt and skinny. he ever got. He looked like he was on death's door, literally.
Make Keith Richards look like Arnold Schwarzenegger.
True. I mean, it's funny. He's not dressed up in the horror outfit, but I think this is the scariest that he ever
Yeah, wore. He's a little more... He's scarier than when he was classic Alice Cooper, just because there's an element of danger to it,
yeah.
Because I'm interviewing somebody who's completely fried out of their minds right now, but are still holding it together just enough to make me worry.
But it's still amazing how articulate he is in the interview. It's like, it's just, no matter how fucked up he got, he was always the same guy.
Yeah.
Like, he never really let it show.
For sure.
Yeah, he's like one of the most high-functioning alcoholic and drug addicts I've ever seen. But yeah, so this was the song that was, one of the songs that was performed on that show, and I love it. And he's broken it out a couple of times over the years. I think it should be a regular in the set. This is Who Do You Think We Are?
Who do you think we are?
So this album, it comes out on September 1st, which is weird because the tour's already been going on. And so what I read was that it's reported that the album was supposed to be called Skeletons in the Closet, but it ends up getting changed to match the title and the theme of the tour. Mm. Because, I mean, that's become a whole thing now, the whole Special Forces thing, because the band's dressing up like military yeah. guys and all that stuff. And the album only reaches 125 on the U.S. Mm. album charts, and by mid-November... it's already off yeah. completely. Like, just weeks later, it barely makes it, and then it's gone. But he had a great band behind him, so, I mean, things didn't go so good on this one. But he had Danny Johnson on guitar. He came from Rick Derringer and had played a little with Rod Stewart. Then he got Mike Panera on guitar, and he was in a band called Blues Image. They had a song called Ride, Captain, Ride.
Oh, I remember that
song.
On
my mystery ship.
And then he started a sandwich restaurant.
Did he really?
Yeah, Panera.
Panera? Maybe. Then you got Eric Scott on bass. He's Wisconsin's very own Eric Scott on bass.
Eric Scott was kind of the musical director during that period.
Yeah. He ends up putting him in charge of producing compilation albums for him for like many years to come beyond this.
Yeah, he kind of held things together during
that. Then
you got
another Wisconsin boy, Craig Cramp, on drums. And he had previously played four songs on Paul Stanley's 1978 solo album.
Met him at the NAMM show in Nashville a long time ago.
Nice. Yep. Should maybe try to get him on the show.
Yeah, I think
sometime.
He still lives here.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
He'd go on to play on a bunch of different albums, including Steve Perry's solo album, and he was a co-writer on the song Oh Sherry. So, see? Isn't that weird?
It's crazy how small a world it is. We were just talking
VIPs
about one of the other
talking
writers
about
on that song. Crazy.
We were just talking about that song in a completely different context with our Chris and Aaron Show VIPs. So if you're not one, become one.
Yeah, go to Patreon.
And get all the inside information.
So what's your overall view on this record?
Don't really like it. Yeah. I don't really like most of the stuff on it. I'm a way bigger fan of Flush the Fashion. Mm-hmm. I think out of the four of these, this one comes in third place.
Okay.
This one comes in third place. But there is a song on here I really, really like a lot. And that one's called You Look Good in Rags. That's a good classic kind of hard rocking, more of an Alice Cooper kind of stuff that I dig.
The cover of 7 and 7 is such a bizarre song. He did a video for that one too. Have you seen the video for that?
Sometimes these things are just a little too artsy fartsy for me.
But have you seen the video for 7 and 7 is? It's weird. He's like.
See, that's funny because I was looking at this going, well, clearly they didn't make videos for any of these songs.
Oh yeah, they did.
Wow.
And the video is really bizarre. He's like boxing and stuff. It's just a weird video.
But is that the one where he's on the bus?
Yeah.
Then I did see that. Yeah. That is weird.
Yeah. Everything about this era is weird, but it's it's
again, you look
fascinating.
At it, and it's not Alice Cooper. No. You know, you don't see the Alice Cooper that you knew from the years before. Again, this is him dissociating himself with himself to become something new and try a different way because the other one just kind of petered out. And that happens to the best of these bands sometimes.
Yeah.
I got a story for you. You're going to love this. So in 1981, right here in good old Nashville, Tennessee, Willie Nelson has been booked to headline the Tennessee State Fairgrounds, but he's got to pull out due to illness. The promoters replace him with Alice Cooper. They're fearful that he won't draw the Nashville crowd that Willie would have, so strategically, they perpetuate a rumor that the Rolling Stones are going to make a surprise appearance. They even go as far as booking local hotel rooms in the names of the band members.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, they're all about it. So a reporter from the Tennessean newspaper polled attendees on their way into the show and found about a half-half split between people actually coming to see Alice Cooper and people who bought tickets expecting to see the Stones.
So they didn't announce Alice?
Yeah, no, Alice was announced.
But then they started a rumor on the side that the Stones
are
going to be there?
Are going to show up, like either before or after or maybe during or something.
That's wild.
And there were people going, no, I'm here to see the Stones. You know, I've been told that they're showing up here tonight. And they said they even had the DJ go up on for introducing the bands, like, oh, yeah, we got Alice Cooper here tonight, and who knows who else. And so the reporter tracked him down and said, why'd you say that? And he's like, well, the promoters wanted me to say it. I don't really think the Stones are here. And so this all went on right here in Nashville in 1981. But the coolest thing about it was at the end of the article, the reporter noted that it didn't really matter at the end of the show because Alice Cooper
won him over.
He totally won everybody.
Oh, that's
over.
Cool.
Yeah.
I'd really never heard that story.
I never did either.
That's interesting. Maybe I should perpetuate a rumor that Metallica is coming to the Rock and Pod Expo.
Sell a couple extra rooms, just put them in their names.
Yeah. Well, Beavis and Butthead did it. Remember that? We're going to play a show, and the marquee says Metallica, and like thousands of people show up, and it's like, hey, guys.
Well, I guess that pretty much brings us up to 1982.
Yeah. So now we're up to probably. I know the next album, a lot of people consider the weirdest, but I think this one is the strangest of the Blackout Era albums.
Yeah, this is my least favorite, for sure.
Is it?
Yeah.
So this is Zipper Catches Skin. From our memory of talking with Dick Wagner, I think he was brought in to kind of try to save this record because they were working on it, and Alice was such a mess on cocaine. Like, everybody was freebasing.
Yep.
That was his thing.
I think Dick told us a story about how he had it on a chair behind a curtain.
Yep.
And slowly, like, he's back there, everybody's going and taking hits off the crack pipe.
Yep.
But, like, acting like everything's okay and nothing's wrong. And he's like, I see you guys behind that curtain. I know I'm not stupid.
Yeah. It's funny that 82 is only his seventh solo album, but I guess that makes sense. But
I guess if that doesn't count the original Alice Cooper band.
That's true. Yeah. But bizarre record, one that I can't totally get on board with to this day. And it's one like Cheap Trick's The Doctor. It's one of those like once a year I put it on just to convince myself if it's good. And it never works. It's just there's a couple of moments that are good. But
I like the song I Like Girls a little bit, kind of. You know, that's still kind of just a regular rockin' tune.
There's
again, this one is just for me, it's really artsy-fartsy. There's some really weird stuff on here that I don't know if they're even songs, half of them. You know, this is like a Zappa record or something. I can't get into it. I didn't pick anything off of Zipper Catches Skin.
Oh, really?
Nope.
Oh, I've got something off of here. Let's go ahead and do that, and we'll talk more about the album.
Flush the Fashion.
Well,
nothing left.
I don't know. I like a handful of songs off this. I think Zorro's Ascent is cool. I think I'm the Future is an interesting song.
Yeah.
It also was
Make That Money.
I Am the Future was the theme song for a movie called Class of 84. It'd be too much of a compliment to call it a B movie. It's like a D movie.
Yeah.
And have you ever seen it?
No.
It's about a guy who's he's like a substitute teacher, and he comes to this high school, and like he ends up having to duke it out with all the punk kids that are there, and these the jocks and the assholes and
like gangsters.
There's a scene where they try to rape the guy's wife, and it's really fucked up. There's a lot of stuff in that movie that wouldn't fly today, but it's a terrible movie. But that's like I Am the Future gets played like four times throughout the movie.
Huh?
It's like a thread going through the whole thing. I don't know why that song was picked. And then there's also a funny TV commercial for this record on YouTube you can watch where Alice goes into a bathroom.
Yeah. You got to check that out. That's pretty wild.
That's good. But like Zorro's a Sin, I Am the Future are two of the highlights for me. But the one that I wanted to pick, just because I think it's funny, and it was actually written with Patty Donahoe, who was the singer of the band The Waitresses. I don't know if you remember them. It's a funny little tune called No Baloney Homo Sapiens.
Hey, you out there in outer space, you're looking at some style and grace. The blood and gutty human race. Well, come on down here, meet us. And all your sightings up there in the sky, cause we're no baloney homo sapiens. Keep calling. Oh, we're no baloney homo
I guess that one ain't too bad.
It's more of a comedy song than anything, I think. But
Alice is good at that stuff sometimes.
But I like that one. I don't know. I like all the records just to a different degree.
Yeah.
but they're just bizarre.
And then as far as this one, I mean, he does kind of what Kiss did in 80 when they were slumping in the United States. They went to Australia where they were beloved, and Alice Cooper heads to Europe where he hasn't been in a very, very long time. Mm-hmm. And one thing I was watching on YouTube was this video from the UK where he's getting interviewed by this British dude. And again, you know, you could see how just fried he is. But yet he's got it so together. He is like the definition of a functioning alcoholic or drug addict at that time. Because, like you said, the way he talks and you can see the wheels are rolling in his mind, you know. It is like, you know, he's so high right now. Yeah. But you just can't tell it, you know, unless you look at his giant eyeballs.
Right.
But yeah, he's got it together, even though you know he's completely wasted.
Yeah, he just he looks so bad during this time, and I don't know. It's just interesting look back. I wish there was more documentation of this stuff. I mean, obviously, I wish he remembered more of it. But there's not even a lot on, you know, TV stuff on YouTube from this time. It's very little.
Yeah, see, even with my research, I found quite a bit of cool stuff over the first couple albums we talked about here today, but now it just sort of drops off. It
definitely drops, especially for the next one.
Yeah, there's because after that European tour, I think Alice just kind of goes home and stays there.
Yeah, he goes back to Phoenix and huddles in his house and just does drugs all the time.
Yeah. But he owes Warner Brothers another album.
Yeah, even though Warner's have pretty much given up on him at that point, but they want him to fulfill the contract. But so then...
So they get Bob Ezrin.
Yeah.
Bob Ezrin calls Dick Wagner. Bob Ezrin says, "We got to record this thing in Toronto. I'm not going down to Phoenix." And Alice Cooper's like, "I'm not leaving this room unless it's to get more drugs. And then I'm going back to that room." And then that's it. So he sends Dick Wagner down to Phoenix to basically talk Alice Cooper into going to Toronto. And he does it.
It took days.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was weird. It was like trying to get a frightened animal out of hiding. You know, Dick was like, I'd sit out there in the living room with a guitar and he'd come in and he'd look and then he'd go back. And then like each day he got a little closer to wanting to work again.
Yeah, yeah.
But just that tells you the fragile state that he was in at the time. It's like as articulate and smart and witty as he is in interviews, it just seems like from what Dick told us, he was in a really bad place to where I think he had almost given up on life at that point.
Right. You know, and Dick never really went into the details of what they talked about, but he told us about how, you know, that time spent with him in Phoenix before they go to Toronto is some of the, it's like the closest that he ever got to Alice Cooper because they were able to talk and share some of their, you know, shared experiences through different, you know, they're both rock musicians, you know, they both had, you know, drugs and alcohol and girls and all the things that come along with it in the 70s and the 80s. And Dick, Alice found somebody that could relate. And so I think it made him feel safe, made him feel comfortable. And then on top of it all, you got one of the greatest guitar players ever sitting on your couch and he's out there playing stuff and you want to write deep down, you know, Alice Cooper wants to create stuff. Mm-hmm. And so they decided that, you know, Warner Brothers is not going to push this album.
No.
We're only releasing it because we're contractually obligated to. And so let's go do whatever we want to do.
Mm-hmm. That's
what they did. It actually turns out to be kind of a magical thing.
It is. I think it's, you know, it's if you're looking for 18 schools out, Alice Cooper, you're not going to get it.
No.
But I think for that time where his mental state was at that time and... But I love the braveness of it because it like the other three albums, you can hear him kind of chasing trends.
Exactly.
This one, he is not chasing any trend at all. He just made the album that he wanted to make.
In that moment.
Yeah, in that moment. And that's why it has its own timeless atmosphere. Like you hear it now and it doesn't sound like something made in 1983 to me. It sounds almost otherworldly when I listen
to
it.
Yeah, exactly. You can never listen to this album and say, oh, that must have came out in the 80s or oh, that must have been a 70s album. It doesn't fit anywhere with anything ever except it's magical and it's awesome.
Yeah.
And you know, the number one source to get information from this is our interview with Dick Wagner.
He laid everything out there to his recollection of the whole making of this from getting Alice out of the house to writing the songs to recording it, all the gear they use the Fairlight, you know, the synthesizer or Fairlight drums, I think is what it was.
Yeah, and then drummed over the top of it for real, yeah.
And about, you know, the difficulty of having to work with Bob Ezrin, even though he's a genius.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you go to the Albums Unleashed Dada episode with Dick Wagner, I think you'll get a true crash course in this record. And it was mind-blowing for us. You know, we had high hopes that it would be good, but it well exceeded our expectations.
I remember walking out of that because that was the very first Albums Unleashed that we ever did. Was Alice Cooper's Dada.
Was that the first one?
That was the very first one.
Oh, I didn't
one.
Realize that.
We created it as an excuse to get Dick Wagner back on the show, yeah. And then it became what it became.
Wow, I didn't realize that.
And I was listening to a little bit of it today, and I kind of had to shed a tear a little bit.
Yeah, because I can't really listen to it anymore.
I still, you know, and I haven't listened to it in forever, but it was cool to go back and hear it again after all this time.
Yeah.
And man, it hits you hard because it was a guy that... I mean, he was such a huge part of rock history. I mean, he played with Kiss. He played on Destroyer, you know, and then he played on all these Alice Cooper albums, Welcome to My Nightmare, all
played
the way
on
up
Aerosmith.
To Dada, Aerosmith, you know, all kinds of stuff. And, you know, amazing solo career, too. Mm-hmm. You know, listen to some of them solo Dick Wagner albums and the Frost from back in the day, you know, some good Detroit rock.
Yeah.
And we got to meet him. We got to spend time with him. Mm-hmm. And it was something really, really special to talk about this album because to him... Who comes around asking about Dada?
And the fact that he was so proud of the album and never really got a chance to expound, other than and his book is great. Check out his book.
Definitely,
because there's a lot in there on that book. But
Not Only Women Bleed.
Not Only Women Bleed, but
comes
he
with a CD.
He seemed like genuinely happy that we were as enthusiastic about it.
Yeah,
and it just kind of helped him just dredge up a lot of stuff he hadn't thought about in a very long time. And he got emotional during the recording of it, and that took us off guard. It's one of those things where he was nice to us on the phone call episode we did, but then when we met him, I think us and our friends who are around, we all just fell in love with the guy.
Yes,
I mean he was just such a sweet man, and I hate that he's gone, but I'm so glad we got to spend some time with him at the time because. You know, it's just of all the guests we've had, he's definitely up there at the top. I mean, he just of great interaction that we've had with somebody we've interviewed.
For sure. Yeah. Amazing. Yeah. A little bond was formed that day.
You
could feel it. There was something magic about that too. There's something magic about this whole album and everything involved in it. And if you can even sit down and listen to it, just turn the lights down low, put some candles on or something.
Track one will scare the hell out of you.
Put on some nice headphones and just, you know, let it take you somewhere. Because it might scare you a little, but it's definitely worth the ride. I know you must have a couple of picks off this
one. I do.
One.
Yeah. And I preface this, Pass the Gun Around would have been my number one for this whole era. But we played it a couple of weeks ago,
right.
So I want to also...
That's funny. I knew that when I saw that. Well, Chris just played his number one favorite Alice Cooper song.
I want to showcase a couple of other songs. And my first one is going to showcase the great wittiness of Alice's lyrics. The music is great on this song. Dick does a great job on the guitar parts. But the main focus for me is just the hilarity in some of these lyrics. I mean, who else sings about being a shopping mall Santa in Atlanta?
I love it. I love it so much.
Who would have come up with that other than Alice Cooper?
It's a story song, and I like it.
I love this, and it's my number five from the Blackout era. This is No Man's Land.
I got a job in Atlanta in a mall playing Santa, not because of any talent, but because I was the only one to see who fit. Everybody shopping, little sticky kids were hopping on my lap with the fingers in my beard. I guess they thought that I was really it. She sat down on my lap and said to me, I'm 23 and I need someone. You look like someone who can play with me. Stay with me, all day with me. Cause I'm in no man's land.
Can't seem to find a real man. You know I'm looking for a steel man.
She said, I'm in no man's land.
I'm gonna show you a real good.
Screaming in hysteric chill, I swear I never heard such profanity. I dropped my suit on the floor, they were trying to block the door, they were calling her a whore, they were driving to Nativital insanity. We drove away in her Mercedes Benz, dirty blinds spit into the breeze. She said, I wanna put you under my tree, you're just a little gift from me to me, cause I'm
a real man. You know I'm looking for a steel man.
She's
could see it in my eyes. She was secretly surprised when she discovered my emotional plurality. She said, come and lay down on the floor with me. It's warmer here by the fire. She didn't know that there was more of me. She'd have to learn to love hard for me. Cause I'm in no man's land.
I'm looking for the real me. If only I could feel me.
You know I'm in no man's land.
Sometimes I gotta play me. It's really hard to stay me.
Hey, I'm in no man's land.
I'm looking for the real me. If only I could feel me.
You know I'm in no man's land.
Sometimes I gotta play me. It's really hard to stay me.
That's one thing you can never take away from Alice Cooper is how smart his lyrics are. Yeah. And how poetic he is when he puts them together over these awesome songs.
Yeah, that's a great song. But the girl just picking up out of the mall and taking off with him, you know, it's just awesome.
It's wild. I would just so love to have been a fly on the wall when all this was getting put together. Those three, yeah. You know, those three masters of their art making something like this happen. And the beauty of it, that there's no pressure. They're not trying to write a hit single, yeah. Not even close.
And I think from what Dick told us, they had a blast actually making this because it was truly from the heart, you know, and they didn't, the record company didn't give a shit.
And that's what makes this album so special, I think, is the fact that, like you said, the last few, he's chasing some trends on that stuff. He's trying to kind of be something that he's not. Mm. In this one, he ain't got nothing to lose. Right. He don't care. As a matter of fact, he's kind of being a jerk about it. You know, he's kind of sticking it in the face of Warner Brothers.
Oh, yeah.
Saying, you know, hey, good luck with this. Even though I know you're not going to do nothing with it anyway.
Right.
This is one of my all-time favorite Alice Cooper songs. I love the conversation and the stories Dick Wagner told us about this one. This song is actually about two super sexy Toronto waitresses that wanted to spend a little time with Alice Cooper and Dick Wagner, but they did not. What they did get was a song written about them in kind of a roundabout way. They might have been horrified, but you're going to love it. From Dada, this is Scarlett and Sheba.
Scarlett wants to hold me, wearing just a red velvet hat. Sheba's in the shadows, waiting for a turn and back. In the parlor where the lights are low, a vulture sister act out, watch this show. They're trying to kill me.
Alice Cooper song of the Blackout era.
That's the one I always hound Chuck Garrick to play.
Yeah, yeah, that's funny.
Because it would sound so damn good live.
That's so funny. We are such nerds like that. Every time we see Chuck Garrick,
we bug
that's
him
what
about
we do.
It.
We bug him about that. Put Scarlett and Sheba in the set
list.
Because
you could even have dancers come out.
It would sound so good live. Yeah.
You could make it a real show.
Yes.
It would be so freaking... I want to start an Alice Cooper tribute band just so I can put that song on stage.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how strongly I believe in that song.
Somebody out there listening to this knows Alice Cooper. You tell him that Chris and Aaron said, please put Scarlett and Sheba in the playlist.
Of all the songs from the Blackout era, I think that one would translate the best live.
I think so, too. Because like you said, you could do something with it. You could have Scarlett and Sheba. You could have one dressed in black and one dressed in white. You know, one's evil and one's nice.
I just,
you know, and
it makes,
or are they?
You know, although maybe there's hope, you know, he's brought Payne back in, into the set list, you know, so, you know, maybe he's going to be more open over time.
He's going back, he listens to him like, this is really good. Who wrote this? You did.
That song would be so great live.
Yeah.
Especially with his current band playing it.
Yes.
I would love that, man.
Do it, Alice. Come on, please.
So I guess the last one is for me, right?
Yes.
Okay. And it's number one on my list, so that makes sense, right?
Perfect.
So before we finish, but yeah, Dada, just, wow. I mean, and I know I knew we would spend more time on Dada than we did anything else.
Because it means so much more to us.
Yeah.
You know, what's funny is when we did that album's Unleashed, I never listened to it. I had to order it then and there so I could know something about it. Because like you said, there wasn't nothing we could really read online.
Mm-mm.
And the interview we did was based off of like one article that you had found.
We found a guy, it was called ultimateguitar.com, I think. I can't remember his name, so forgive me. But
It's in the archive.
Yeah, he did
137.
It was a long, basically, a theory on
what
he thought the concept of the album was.
And it's cool because with an album like this, and it's just like Dick Wagner said, you'd present to him one of these theories and he'd go, could be.
Yeah, some stuff he was like, no, definitely not.
But yeah.
But there was other stuff where he was like, maybe, that might be a little true.
Up to interpretation, because some of this stuff is pretty wide open.
Yeah. Well, and there's, you know, there's the Sonny character that lives through the whole album. And so I still think it's about it. Well, and Dick kind of told us it's basically based on a character named Sonny who has multiple personalities.
Right.
So that's... And even in No Man's Land, there's that song, you know, she'd have to get used to all three of me or something like that. So
three or four, something like
that. There's references throughout about multiple personalities.
And there's, again, so many great songs on this album, too. There's other ones that we're not picking here today that easily we could.
Oh, sure.
There, I mean, the I Love America is a great song.
I play that every 4th of July. Yeah. I'll be playing it next week.
Fantastic.
But yeah, so I'm going to go
Dyslexia.
Dyslexia. That's a weird song, too.
Yeah, but it's one of those smart songs.
And Fresh Blood. I've used that.
Oh, Fresh Blood.
I've used as the theme song for Fresh Blood on several episodes.
So these albums really, when other people are going, 18 and school's out, we're going, you know, Scarlett and Sheba.
Yeah. We're those weird guys in the corner. But so I'm going to go out with the song, and as Dick told us when we talked to him, this song was a definite pointed shot at Warner Brothers Records. But what makes me love it so much is this. I think this song could have fit in on Goes to Hell or Welcome to My Nightmare because have the early solo Alice Cooper vibe to it, and it's just kind of a little creepy sounding song, but it's so well written and it's so well performed. This is Formerly Warmer from Dada, and we'll see you next week.
God bless Dick Wagner.
Hear him play in his twisted key. That's the way he calls to me on a silver tray. I keep the master key. In every way he depends on me. Jacket holds in his satin sleeves. Candlelit puddles, arthritic fingers, yellow stained ivory keys.
Sports fans, there's only one sports book in the great state of Maryland with over 50 years' experience booking bets and supporting customers. Betfred Sportsbook at Long Shots is now open and is the only sports book in Frederick offering cash betting on football, basketball, world soccer, and more. Visit the Betfred Sportsbook at I-270 and MD-85 in Frederick, right next to Long Shots off-track betting. Go to BetfredSports.com for more information and your chance to win exclusive merchandise. Must be 21 or older. Play responsibly. For help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.